سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا عبد القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: يا أيها الذين آمنوا آمنوا. صلوات على محمد وعلى آله.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
If any good, if any virtue is looking too easy and you see that there are no obstacles in front of it, then a believer should doubt whether this is good or not. Any good that you see, any virtue that you see that seems too easy, and that you see that this is very easy to do, then you need to truly be hesitant in thinking that this is good. Because good is a collection of different qualities that sometimes contradict each other. And when one of those qualities is prevented from growing, then the other grows. And a person has one side of what goodness is. But goodness truly becomes goodness, and good truly becomes good when all these contradictory qualities start working together. They start working together. Until then, goodness and virtue will not become in its true beautiful state. It will be raw. It won't be truly beautiful. When a person looks at religion, a person, you know, he looks at religiousness and looks at the practice of religion, truly, it is a beautiful thing. Without the Usuluddin and Furuuddin and, you know, Allah and Rasulullah and everything, all of that, besides all of that, just the structure and the theme of religion is something that is beautiful. Just the theme, that structure of, you know, what deen is and what the practice of deen is. You see, as an example, just as an example only, when you play a video game, you play a video game and you see that other than the game itself, what is enjoyable is the graphics that are in the game. You know, even not even paying attention to the game, you just look at the graphic and say, wow, this is nice. Right? That this is good. You know, this is something worthwhile, enjoyable. The game itself is something else. As an example I'm giving. In the practice of religion, just these small, subtle teachings and these practices itself is something that a person enjoys trying to fulfill. Truly, a person who knows what is religion, who knows the structure and the theme of religion, who knows what it is, he will get a enjoyment out of just looking at the different aspects of religion, other than the main objectives that Allah had set. Let me just make myself clear if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
When you want to do good, when you want to be virtuous, my friends, you have to understand that there are different qualities and different things that are involved. And these different things need to be set in their proper place and worked on together in order for that good to take shape. If one aspect of you grows while the other aspect is weak, then you see you get a broken picture, you get something that looks like good, but it is not. And hence, one of the goods, one of the virtues, one of the issues that is often neglected, that mu'mineen have in their attachment to Ahlul Bayt, is the issue of the rule of Ali and the honor of Hussein. Now you see, before I even go into that, I'll give you a prelude so you start to think of what I'm saying. When nowadays the world, throughout the world and here also and everywhere else in the world, the concept, the idea of a religious person, what is religiousness? What does it mean to be religious? Has been restricted to something that looks good and is pure. That is all. That it is restricted to that. Something that is religious, if it's clean, if it's pure, if it's looks good, then everyone regards it as religious and they give that relationship between religion and that thing. And concepts such as power and honor are not associated with religion. You see, if someone is powerful, if someone has rule, if someone has authority, he says this has nothing to do with religion. It means he's not a religious person. He's not a religious person. If someone stands up for honor, it means he's not a religious person. Why? Because a religious person is supposed to be submissive. He's supposed to be accommodating. He shouldn't be going after these things. He shouldn't be running after these things. He shouldn't have honor. He should be submissive and he should have no honor. And then you are a religious person. And you will see this, that when we say that, oh, this person is very religious, right away it comes to our mind, he's submissive. He doesn't say anything to anyone. And he is not humble, but a person who's disgraced. You know, I mean, this is the idea you get of religion. Oh, he's a mashallah, a very religious person. Yes, he is a very religious person. This is the idea that we have of religion. We have been indoctrinated with this concept of religion, and the whole world is. And the emphasis now, when we look back at the Ahlul Bayt, we see these two situations, other than the Prophet who faced every situation. I'm talking about the Imams now. When it comes to the Imams and what we learn from the Imams, two strange situations are faced. You see, what they say, really, about what is religiousness is right, but is misconstrued. You see, a mu'min is flexible. One of the signs of a believer is that he's flexible. You know, it's easy to work with him. He accommodates others. You can reason with him. He's not hard-headed. Right? He's not hard-headed. You know, if you go to a mu'min, he will never be hard-headed and say that, oh, you know what, that's it, I don't listen to you all. So you will see that he will listen. He will be accommodating. He will be flexible. So being flexible is there. You see that in mu'mineen. We are told in Islam in many places. You see a mu'min when he sees someone harming himself doing haram. When you see someone who is harming himself and he does haram things. So what happens? You look at that. A mu'min will be like, you know what? You know, it's between him and Allah. Let it be. It's between him and Allah. Why? Because that haram that he is doing is only harming himself. He won't be like hard-headed and jump the wall and come inside and say, how dare you drinking? Yes, we have those examples of Islamic, Muslim leaders who used to go out and see if people are sinning or not. Who used to go out and see that. Everyone knows the example that I'm giving. I don't have to take names. Right? Muslim leader, well known, used to go out at night and wants to see who in amongst my subject is sinning. He came to a place and he heard that someone is drinking in their house. So he jumped the wall. He jumped his wall and he came inside and said, hey, you're drinking. It's haram. The person inside the house is like shocked. What's going on? You know? He's thinking, huh? He said, listen, what are you accusing me of? You're drinking alcohol. He says, okay, I admit. But I did only one thing wrong. You did three things wrong. He said, you did three things wrong. He said, what's that? I'm the leader, I'm the Khalifa. How dare you say I did wrong? What did I do wrong? He said, Allah said that you shouldn't spy on a mu'min and you spy. Right? Allah says that when you want to enter a house, you come to the front door, you jump the wall. You see, my friends, such people, really, those who are, and this is what we need to understand, what is power? What is flexibility? A mu'min is flexible. Someone who's selfish is not flexible. Someone who is selfish is not flexible. Someone who is a mu'min, he is flexible. He will see others doing wrong when it's only hurting themselves. Yes, if it hurts other people, if he's bringing out in the people, that's different. Then you stop that. But if he's only hurting himself, then you say that it's between him and Allah. May Allah guide him. You leave it at that. That's the sign of a mu'min. You see, he's flexible. And now we need to see this flexibility in a mu'min. How does it appear? Where does it come from? My friends, this flexibility that a mu'min has, the basis for that is two things. The basis for flexibility in a mu'min is two things. One is power, the other is honor.
Yes.
There are two places where his flexibility surfaces. It surfaces when there is power in his hand or when there's honor in his hand. When he speaks from the platform of strength, then his flexibility is in his power. And when he speaks from the platform of weakness, then his flexibility is through honor. And that is why you see these two things, whenever are discussed. Unfortunately, they're not discussed much. But I'm discussing this in front of you so we understand one of the most beautiful things that we learn from Ahlul Bayt. One, a person is flexible in two situations. When he is in power, the other when he is not in power. When he is in power, that flexibility comes from the platform of strength and authority. And when he is not in power, when he is in a weak position, then that flexibility comes from honor and izzah. So when we speak about authority and flexibility and authority, we take the example of Ali. When we speak about the flexibility and honor, we take the example of Hussein. My friends, this is something that we need to now put now. These things, all of these things, that is izzat, an honor. That is power, authority. All of these things, my friends. And then being flexible in those things. Where are you flexible? Where are you not? This is where you see we learn from Islam. Where are you flexible right now? When you looked at Imam Ali, one of the soldiers who went to battle with Imam Ali in the Battle of Siffin, he died, became shaheed there in the battlefield. He had a wife and children. The wife had no one to take care of after he died. I mean, really, you know, when you look at the lives of the Imams, you know, we speak about these wars that happened, but wars that happened had many situations around it. People died. People were killed. This person who went with Imam Ali died. He was shaheed. He gets the reward. Right? But the wife, she lost her husband. She has to take care of the kids. There's no income in the house. They're on welfare. I mean, they're living off of zakat and help from other people. And what they get. Because whenever someone is shaheed in Islamic government, then it is the job of the government to take care of those who remain behind. The family. So they're being helped. But she doesn't have a husband now. And she was blaming her situation on Imam Ali. And she said that this is Ali's fault. Allah will deal with him. Allah will deal with him. And Allah will deal with him in this way. And so on and so forth. She's going out in the streets and she's saying that this is Ali's fault. I am in this situation because of Ali. If Ali didn't take my husband, all these wars didn't happen, and you know, my husband wouldn't die. He would be here. He would be alive with me. So many things. Once she was in the bazaar, and in the bazaar, as she was buying something, some wheat, and she saw the price, she was upset because there was inflation, and the price was high. She said, "What? That's the price of bread now?" You know? And she said a few words about Imam Ali. It's all because of him. It's all because of him that the price of bread is high. And that I'm in this situation and this and that. As she said that, Imam Ali was standing there. Standing there, he came up to her and said, you know, "May I help you? Right, you have all these things, this and that. You look alone, I will help you to get these things home." Took the things with her. And on the way, obviously, she was going on about her story. This and that, and all these things. And you know, he said, listen, I will help you. You have kids over here, you have to take care because they're crying. He said, let me help you make the bread. He made the bread. Why? And the oven was there, he was making the bread. And he just said, you know, obviously she said, you know, you look like a good man. May Allah protect you from Ali. Imam Ali, you see, my friend, understand this. Now, obviously, Imam Ali looked at that oven, right? You see, here he is the leader. He is in charge. He has the government. He has the army. And this one lady is saying these things. You see, Ali is teaching that this is the state of power he is in, but this is not the place to use your power. This is not the place to use your power and strength. That doesn't make you strong and courageous by using this power. He said, you say this, have her arrested. No, when she is blaming him, he doesn't blame her for blaming him. He just looks at the oven and the fire in the oven and he tells himself, Ali, be afraid of the fire of hell.
Yeah.
You see what happened, my friends? You see, understand this. This is the complaint of one of his subjects. One of the subjects under him is complaining about him, even though it's not his mistake. He has done no wrong. The war is jihad in Allah's way. This has to be done. There will be people who are dead. It is not his fault. But you see, he doesn't take the complaints of people and say, oh no, it's not my fault. I didn't do this. He doesn't start to defend himself. He's saying that, listen, use this complaint as a reminder for yourself. My friends, when someone is selfless, when someone is working for Allah, when someone wants to do something for Allah, then he doesn't let his pride get in the way. He lets his honor rule over him. He bows down. If someone comes to say, oh, you know what, you'll see this happen. Strength is not that. You know, for example, you come and read something here. You know, I mean, some people will read something over here, this and that, and they say that, okay, good, alhamdulillah, you got reward, this and that. Now, people don't realize their weaknesses. Now, because I've seen this happen many times. You go to them and say, listen, brother, you know, I mean, like, everyone should read for 5 minutes, you read for 10 minutes. Now you see this. I will never read here again. We never read here again. You see, this is a sign of a weak person. This is a sign of a weak person. This sign of a person who doesn't have virtues in balance. He's imbalanced. Right? If someone, for example, if I'm in charge of the masjid, I'm the president, this and that, I'm trying to do things over here, something goes wrong. And people say, hey, what's going on over here? The parking is messed up over here. When you're in the parking lot, you all don't know how to park. Understand that. You see, mu'min, he's not hard-headed, he's flexible. If someone complains about him, he takes it in and says, Allah, help me to get better so that people don't complain. I'm not here to show off how good I am. I'm trying to show how good I am to Allah the hereafter. Sometimes it does happen, my friends, understand. You know why? You know, when people are selfish, they're only looking at themselves. You know, they're only looking at themselves. And that's why you see they're always complaining to Allah. They always have complained to Allah. Allah, you know why I'm here. Why do I have this face? Why am I poor? Why was I born in this place? Why did I have this house? Everyone wants to be rich. Everyone wants to be handsome and beautiful. Everyone wants to be so good and this and that. I was born this way, what can I do? Complain. I was born this way, what can I do? Okay, you're born this way, what can you do? Alright. Allah says, alright. That's fine. You want to be born the way you want? You want to be handsome? You want to be this? Because they said, we have no choice. Allah made us this. Right? And Allah did. He put you in a household. He made you this and this and that. And now you are like upset. Why am I in this situation? Why am I looking at this? Why am I this? Allah says, don't worry. I'm giving you the whole opportunity to make your own house, to look the way you want to look. Everything. You were born in this dunya for 60 years. You will be born again in the hereafter for eternity. You have the chance to make your own life there. You have the chance to make your own life there. How you want to look? Work on it now. You have a whole lifetime. How do you want to be? Rich or poor? Work on it now. You have a whole lifetime. When you are given the chance, you don't want to work. When Allah gives it to you, you're saying, Allah, why did you put me here? Then what do you want? Friends, you see, a mu'min has to be flexible. And the reason he's flexible is because he has power and he has honor. That's why he's flexible. Right? That's why he's flexible. When Imam Ali met the woman who's complaining about him, he didn't use his power. He was flexible. Let it go. But where did he use? Where did Imam Ali was inflexible? You see, this is the difference. I want you to understand the difference between what is flexible and what is submissive. You see, when he faced Amr ibn Abdulwud, there was no flexibility. When he faced big warriors, there is no flexibility. When he faced big armies, there is no flexibility. Everyone was saying, easy on Muawiyah. He says, no easy on Muawiyah. There is no flexibility. But when it came to the weak, there is flexibility. When it came to power, when he was in power, there is flexibility. My friends, when power is there, you have to be flexible. When izzat is in question, then you cannot be flexible. When honor is in question, you cannot be flexible. I mean, understand this. When you looked at the Prophet, you saw that he, when he went for Hudaybiyah, he has an army with him. All the people are there with him. And they all are like, okay, you know what? We have an army. We can take over Makkah. The Meccans come and said, listen, you know, let's have a treaty. Prophet said, all right, treaty. What are you doing? We can beat these guys. We have numbers now. We can beat them up easily. Rasulullah saying, no, treaty. They ask for treaty, we'll give them treaty. Let's make peace. God. What? I mean, makes no sense. You see, my friends, when you are flexible in honor, it is not a sign of weakness. When you are flexible in power, it's not a sign of weakness. The same Prophet who with an army was making peace with the Meccans when he was all alone, with no army, with no helpers, and they came to him and said, listen, stop your message, otherwise you will be in trouble. He said, you can give the moon in one hand, the sun in the other hand, but I will not stop.
Yes, yes. Ya Rasulullah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ali Muhammad. These are things that we need to learn. When are we flexible? Imam Ali had power, so you see how flexible he was. He was dealing with this. In fact, if Imam Ali had been like Muawiyah, you know, and just showed a few examples of cruelty and brutality to the people, he didn't have to kill many. Just one or two, right? I mean, you bring someone inside the, you know, in front of anyone, chop his head off. You see, the rest of the people will be submissive. Right? They'll be submissive. No one's going to do anything. Right? Muawiyah didn't kill a lot of people. I mean, he just killed certain people in front of others so that others don't act up. You see, he just showed them. If Imam Ali wanted to be like that, you know that no war would have happened. Everyone would have been submissive. But in power, what did he show? He said, be submissive when you have power. Be flexible when you have power. Be flexible. Work with people. Work with them. But when you have weakness, when you don't have power, and when your honor is at stake, when your izzat is at stake, then you make a stand. Then you make a stand. That's why, my friend, understand that Hussein, everyone was advising him, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Well, the reason is because now the izzat, the honor is at stake. Yes. If I do not stand up now, then they will think that we are weak, that Haq is weak. Haq doesn't get strong because of authority. Haq gets strong when you are standing up for it.
Yes. Yes.
Truth is strong when you're standing up for it, not when you have authority. My friends, this is why Imam Hussein, he was inflexible. He did not listen. He went forward. He went all his thing. No, this is where that happens. This is Izzat of Hussein. This is the Izzat of Hussein. Some things I want to say, inshallah, I'll say in the speech that comes tomorrow about our own self when it comes to this issue.
Yes.
Understand what honor is, my friend. This is honor. Imam Hussein showed how to stand in honor. And he was inflexible. My friends, I want you to see this. In every imam, look at all the imams and research their history. Every imam was flexible with the people. He worked with the people in mind. If they were incapable, the imams would stop. They would not push them more. They won't push them more. They stop there. Okay, this is all the people can handle. Let them just have that much. In Imam Ali's time, he showed a little bit of inflexibility when it came to with Muawiyah. But then when the people, that whole situation that began, he was inflexible. But when he saw that the people could not handle it, so he became flexible again.
Wow.
Right? He became flexible again. Now, if I understand this, the only imam in his stand from the beginning till the end who was inflexible was Imam Hussein. The only imam who was inflexible since the beginning till the end of his movement. He would not stop. He was not looking at how much capacity the people have or not. No, he wasn't looking at that. The only one who wasn't looking at that was Imam Hussein. You see, every imam looked at, it's very important to us to understand, my friends. Why? Because I'll tell you why. Every imam was looking, you know, are the people able to handle this? Are they able to handle this? He says, if not, then let it go. Let it go. Let's be patient with them. The only imam who was not looking at the capacity of the people, whether they're up to it or not, I'm going to rise up and I'm going to expose all of them. That they are incompetent and capable people. The only one was Imam Hussein. Right? The only imam was Imam Hussein who was inflexible, who did not care about the capacity of the people. And he has shown us that. What happens? My friend, what happened? He says that when imams looked at that, when you see that the imam is inflexible, what happens? Then your incompetency will become exposed. People will become opposed for being incompetent. You should just thank the imams for being flexible because they have hidden how incompetent you are. They have hidden the fact how incompetent we are, my friends. By being flexible with us, Imam Hussein, by being inflexible, what did he show? He showed how incompetent the people are. So whenever the imams are inflexible and they do not show flexibility, then it means that they want to expose the people and expose them for what they are. My friends, Imam Hussein was inflexible, so the world, everyone was exposed except for those who went along with him. Who went till the end with him. Now, after Imam Hussein, the only Imam who will be inflexible will be Imam Mahdi.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
When the Imam will come back, he will not show any flexibility to anyone. He will rise, he will make a stand, and he will go on with that stand, either until everyone is killed or there with him. There won't be any grace period, no more, finish, it's over. Just like Imam Hussein's was. No grace period. He made the stand, that's it. Either you come here, you go there. You don't have that much time to think. Just like that, Imam Mahdi will be the same. When he makes a stand, now you don't have any grace period. Oh, Imam's risen, let's now get ready. This is what I'm trying to explain from yesterday, my friends. What was left over. This is something that we need to understand, that they, when the Imam will come back, either we are ready for it, or we are doomed. If you want to be with us, then be ready, my friends. Get ready. This is the way. Imam Hussein's izzat and honor that he had. His stand, really, Imam Hussein's inflexibility was because of his honor. And Imam Mahdi's inflexibility will be because of his power. And really, for a mu'min, just thinking about Imam Mahdi, just the fact that, you know what? Just the idea that Imam Mahdi is going to rise up in power and just going to show what the truth is to everyone, you know, how sweet can it get for a believer? The more you think about it, the more sweeter it becomes if you're a mu'min. If you're a mu'min, really it becomes very sweet. Just thinking about what Imam Mahdi will do. Just thinking about the fact what he is going to do to kuffar. You know, when you are waiting so long, you know, when you're waiting so long after zulm has been done, then really, you know, when you take revenge of that oppression and injustice, then you are truly, it's like sweet. It's really sweet to look at that. And this is something that when we look at Imam's movement and how inflexible he will be and how forceful he will be, what will it be? For us it's sweet. But imagine how sweet it will be for Imam Mahdi. He would have waited a long time, my brothers and sisters. A long time he's been waiting. And each moment that he waits, you know, his hands are perspiring with anticipation. Why? Because you know what? Your grandfather wasn't chopped to pieces. It was Imam Mahdi's grandfather who was chopped. Your grandmother wasn't taken to the bazaar and insulted and humiliated. It is Imam's grandmother that was taken. You know, we cry because of musibat. We cry because of this pain that we feel. But Imam, to him, this pain is real. This pain is real. He feels this pain. But truly, Imam Mahdi feels this pain. And that's why when he will come back, then you will see that not just those who did it, my friends, but every person. That's why it's very important to read these ziyarat and understand them. Not, you know, when Imam Sadiq said, "Lanat upon those who did zulm on you, lanat upon those who killed you," he also says, "Lanat upon those who heard about this and were agreeing with this." Everyone who lived after that and agreed with what happened to Imam Hussein, Imam Mahdi is coming back for them. And we are mu'mineen. We are mu'mineen, we are those who have this love for Ahlul Bayt? How can we not cry when someone we loved had to go through that? When we go through hardship, when we lose someone, it is one thing. But really, may Allah give you the ajr. May Allah give you the reward. May Allah give you the blessings in this dunya and the hereafter. Because you are those people that even when someone of your dies, you don't cry for them, you have the majlis of Hussein and cry for Hussein. What more a certification do you need of you being a believer? And you know how Imam Zamana looks at you. How he looks at you, Imam Zamana looks at you. And every time he looks at you, he feels pride and he feels love for you. He feels this love for you. And how can we not now feel that love for Imam when he is crying? My friends, when we cry, when we read the Majlis of Hussein, when we cry, it is enough to know that the Imam is crying with us. Today is the day of youth. Honorable youth, today is your day. See your leader in Karbala today. See your leader in Karbala. When all the companions had died, until all the companions were alive, they would not let anyone from Ahlul Bayt be involved in the battle. They kept them away. They kept them away. But as soon as all the companions had died, all the companions are dead, now only Ahlul Bayt were there. Now only the family of Hussein was there. It was at that time Ali Akbar, the lad that he is, the youth that he is, came to Imam Hussein and said, "Father, let me go to the battlefield. Let me go to the battlefield." Imam Hussein knew that this is his son, and who else would go before anyone else? He would send his own son before he would send anyone else in the battlefield. This is how Imams led. They led with example, and they wanted to show that it will be my son who will be shaheed first. Then I will go then, because why? If I send anyone else before Ali Akbar, how can I face them? But my son is alive and your son is dead. My friends, Imam Hussein does not remain indebted to anyone. If you cry for him, if you do matam for him, understand this one thing, I promise you, Imam Hussein will repay you one by one. He will give back to you one by one. Imam Hussein will give. He will not remain indebted to anyone. If there's anyone whom Imam Hussein will remain indebted to, Zainab. Zainab, you have done ahsan on me that I cannot repay you. Everyone else I will give back. And I will give back so much that they will be happy with me. But Zainab, I cannot give back what you have given me. Imam Hussein said, "Ali Akbar, go. Go, go to the battlefield." Ali Akbar got the permission from Hussein. As soon as he got the permission from Hussein, Ali Akbar got on his horse, was going towards his horse. Hussein said, "Ali Akbar, where are you going?" Ali Akbar said, "Father, you gave me permission to go, but Ali Akbar, not like this." Ali Akbar, not like this. "You're going to go. No. First, go to Zainab and your mother and ask them, bid farewell to them." That Ali Akbar, when he heard, when he got permission from Hussein, he was ready to throw himself in the midst of this ravaging army. He was ready to go there without any fear. But when Hussein said, "Go to the tent of Zainab," Ali Akbar started to shake. "How can I face head up. Now you see who Ahlul Bayt are, who the children of Ahlul Bayt are. Now you see them, you see their izzat, that they are ready to go and be cut into pieces. But when it comes to go and bid farewell to their mother, they are shaking in their feet because they recognize that this is where Allah's pleasure is. Ali Akbar goes to his mother and says, "Mother, it is time for me to go. It is time for me to go. Allow me to go." Umm Layla cried. She cried. But what can she do? She said, "Listen, Akbar. Listen, I will make dua for you. But Akbar, you know that I'm not the one who raised you. It is Zainab who raised you. Go. Go and ask her for permission." Ali Akbar went to the tent of Zainab, stood outside the tent. How can he approach Zainab? How can he say anything to Zainab? Because Zainab, he knew. You see, Zainab is not someone who's normal. She's very intelligent. She's known as Aqila, Aqila. She is the person Ali Akbar knows that you cannot get anywhere with. Zainab understands everything. She looks into everything. She has the depth of knowledge. Ali Akbar knows, how do I go to Zainab? How do I go to my aunt? How do I let her? How do I get permission from her? The only way Ali Akbar could think of. And he knew that this is the only way she would agree. And she went inside. He opened the door and he saw Zainab sitting down. He went towards Zainab. He went towards Zainab, lied down before her, put his head in her lap. Zainab knew that whenever Ali Akbar wanted something, he would do that with her. Whenever Ali Akbar wanted something, he would put his head in her lap and say, "Zahan, Zainab." Zainab said, "Ali Akbar, you want something from me? You want something from me?" Ali Akbar said, "Aunt Zainab, I just have one question to ask you. Just one question. Give me the answer to this. And I will be happy. I will be happy forever." She said, "Whatever, my son. Ask me, what do you want, my darling? Ask me. Ask me whatever you want. I am ready to answer you." Ali Akbar said, "Tell me, mother, tell me, Aunt Zainab, tell me just one thing. Are you greater in rank or is your mother Fatima greater in rank? Is Fatima greater in rank or are you greater in rank?" Zainab looked at Ali Akbar and said, "What kind of a question is that? Where am I and where is my mother Fatima? How can I even compare myself to Fatima?" Ali Akbar said, "If that is the case, are you willing to sacrifice your son for Fatima's son?" What can Zainab say? Zainab said, "Go, Ali Akbar. You have asked me in a way that there is no way I can say no. I cannot say no now." Ali Akbar left the tent, now ready to go. He went inside. Hussein showed him to the horse. Ali Akbar got on the horse. And the army saw him walking. Ali Akbar's horse started trotting towards the army. And they saw from far away, you could see Ali Akbar coming there. Everyone noticed that this is Rasulullah who's coming. Rasulullah is coming to fight. Where did he come from? Those people who saw Rasulullah, they said, "This is the image of Rasulullah. What is he? Has he come back from the dead to come out and fight with us?" But what they saw is that Ali Akbar, as he rode towards them, they saw an old man walking behind the horse of Ali Akbar. walking behind the horse of Ali Akbar, an old man who seems to be broken by the fact that Ali Akbar is going. Ali Akbar turned around to see the old man. He said, "Father, what are you doing, Father?" "Father, what are you doing, Father? You allowed me to go. Why are you walking behind my horse? Hussain! Can someone ask Hussain? What is he feeling right now? What is he going through right now? Can someone ask Hussain?" Hussain calls out to Ali Akbar. "Ali Akbar, you don't know what it means to let go of a son like you." Ali Akbar went forward. Hussain looked at the sky. All he could do is raise his hands to Allah and said, "Allah, be a witness. Be a witness that I'm sending someone. Ashba'un nas khulkan wa khalkan bi Rasulillah. Who's the closest in every type of way to your messenger. Be witness, I'm sending him." Ali Akbar goes to the battlefield. He goes to the battlefield, the first of the Hashimi clan. He goes towards the battlefield and starts fighting. They start fighting with him one by one. Ali Akbar starts sending them to hell one by one. Ali Akbar is not any normal person. He is the grandson of Ali. He's the grandson of Ali. He has the blood of Fatima. He's the son of Hussein. He's the student of Abbas. Who can come close to Ali Akbar, the first of the Hashimi clan? Every one of the children, Hasim, Aun Muhammad, everyone are looking from their side at Ali Akbar with pride that this is our elder Ali Akbar. This is the one. He is going forward fighting each and every one. He attacks the left side. He attacks the right side. He starts killing people. Some people come forward to fight him. But they, Ali Akbar sends them to hell again. Kills them and forward. And it goes on until now. No one wants to fight Ali Akbar. And wherever he goes, they run away from him. He goes to the left, they run away from him. Like chickens, they run away from Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar sees that no one wants to fight him. So he comes back towards the camp. Hussain looks at Ali Akbar and said, "What happened? Why are you coming back, Ali Akbar?" "Why are you coming back, Ali Akbar?" Ali Akbar said, "Father, what can I say? These people don't want to fight. You see, your son is so strong. Your son is so good. Father, if I had a few drops of water, then I would really show what is bravery to these people. What is courage? I will show them. I will show them, Father." Father looks at his son. Hussain looks at Ali Akbar. Hussain, for him, Ali Akbar, asking him for something is something heavy for him. It's very heavy for Hussain. You see, Ali Akbar, when we say he was raised by Zainab, then Zainab always used to take care of Ali Akbar. Whenever Ali Akbar needed something, he would always ask Zainab for it. He would never ask Hussain. Zainab would never let him ask Hussain. She would always fulfill what Ali Akbar wants. She would always give to what Ali Akbar wants. Everything Ali Akbar desired, Zainab was there to give it to him. Ali Akbar never asked anything from Hussain. Hussain, as a father, always used to yearn, always used to want Ali Akbar to ask him for something. Ask him for something. "Ali Akbar, don't you want anything?" Ali Akbar, you say, "No, my father, I'm fine." "Ali Akbar, don't you need anything?" "No, I'm fine. Do not worry, I'm fine. My aunt Zainab has taken care of me well." Hussain, you always used to yearn for that. And now for the first time in his life, Ali Akbar has come and he's asking for something. Ali Akbar is asking, oh, my father, if I can have some water. If I can have some water. Hussain's heart is broken into pieces. My son, you asked me for something and I could not give this to you. I can make this whole world into water so that you may drink from it. But Ali Akbar, I cannot give you water. I don't have water to give you. I feel embarrassed in front of you, Ali Akbar. Come, Ali Akbar. All I have is the moisture in my own self. Come and suck my tongue and take water moisture is there from it. Ali Akbar comes near Imam Hussain. He comes near Imam Hussain. Imam Hussain sticks out his tongue. Ali Akbar gives a loud shriek. Hussain says, what is the matter, Ali Akbar? He says, you are thirstier than I am. There are thorns in your tongue. Hussain says, go. Go, Ali Akbar. Now you go. Now the only one who will quench your thirst is your grandfather. Rasulullah will quench your thirst. Go, Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar goes back and starts fighting again. In the midst of these ravaging beasts, he starts fighting again. Every time Ali Akbar, again, he will strike, he will call back to his Uncle Abbas and says, Uncle Abbas, do you see me, Ammu Abbas? How am I doing, Ammu Abbas? Abbas would be filled with pride looking at him. He would be filled with pride. He would look at him and say, Akbar, Akbar, oh, Akbar, you don't know how proud I am of you. But a time came, Ali Akbar, how long can he last? There was one person, and they always do this. These people, these cowards, spineless, gutless cowards, could not face Ali Akbar from the front. So he came from the back. In a sneaky way, he brought a spear. He brought a spear from the back, and he started aiming at Ali Akbar. As Ali Akbar was fighting someone, he aimed the spear from the back, and he threw the spear towards his back. The spear went and got stuck in the back of Ali Akbar. In the back of Ali Akbar. Then he went forward, held the spear and pushed it forward until it went through Ali Akbar. It went through Ali Akbar and came out in the front. Ali Akbar went through his chest. Ali Akbar was knocked out, became unconscious. He did not fall off the horse. He stayed on the horse, on the head of the horse. But unfortunately, the horse did not go back to the tents of Hussain. You understood what happened? The horse did not go back to the tents of Hussain. It walked in the midst of the army. Ali Akbar on the back, unconscious. When they saw Ali Akbar is unconscious, everyone came and started with their swords chopping at Ali Akbar. In his back, they were chopping him, hacking him, slapping him. Abbas saw the scene, told Hussain. Hussain got on his horse, started running, taking his horse towards the battlefield. He started taking his horse towards the battlefield. Ali Akbar had his horses, had come near now, and fell down. Ali Akbar had fallen down. He had fallen down. Some life still left in him. Hussain is coming towards Ali Akbar. In the dirt, he cannot see where Ali Akbar is. Call out, Aina, Aina. Ya Waladi, Aina, Aina. Where are you, my son? 7 times he called out, Wa Walada! Gemara. You know, when he saw Ali Akbar from far away, he saw where he was lying. He could not ride his horse anymore. He got off his horse, started walking towards Ali Akbar. Started walking towards him. As he reached closer to Ali Akbar, his legs began to shake. He fell on his knees. Now he's crawling on his knees. Crawling on his knees, he reaches Ali Akbar. He reaches Ali Akbar. On the side he's sitting. Hussein sitting on the side of Ali Akbar. You know, may Allah give you all the tawfiq and the blessing to go to the ziyarat of Karbala. You know, when I went to Karbala, really, one of the places you go to the grave of the Imam, that is the Imam himself. You know, but there are certain places that you go where you cannot keep yourself up. Really, you cannot keep yourself up and you just have to get down. One of those places, if you have a chance to go, you should go. And it's still there that you can go and visit it. It's the place where Ali Akbar fell and Hussein came to meet him. When you go inside there, you can't stand up. You have to fall to your knees. Hussein, how can I not fall to the knees? This place has brought you to your knees. Imam, you know, someone asked Imam Sadiq, he said, you know, what is the most sweetest time, the best time for parents as their parent? What is the best time that they can have? What is the most sweetest time that they have with their children? He said, the sweetest time for a father is then he sees his young boy becoming an adult and reaching the state of youth where now he's an adult and he's able to do his own things and make his own decision. A father looks at that with pride, and that pride can only be felt when you see your son grow up to be that old. And then they asked him, what is the most horrible time for a parent? What is the worst thing that a parent can see? He said, when a child who has grown up to be an adult, when he dies and he has to be at the side of his corpse. Nothing makes a parent grow old as seeing his own son die. In front of him, my friend, Ali Akbar's death has made Hussein an old man. Hussein looks at Ali Akbar. Hussein looks at Ali Akbar and says, my Yusuf. My Yusuf! What has happened to you, my Yusuf? Ali Akbar is hiding. He can't speak. The spear is stuck in his chest. Ali Akbar hiding that. My friends, the last few words, and you give your condolences to Fatima. You give your condolences to Rasulullah. You give your ajr of risalat and fulfill that ajr of risalat with your tears and show them that this is our gift to you. Our mourning and our grief. You have given us this as a blessing. Now you see Hussein on the side of Ali Akbar. Hussein sees this inside the chest of Ali Akbar. Sees the spear inside there. He looks at the spear and says, Ali Akbar, so this is why you cannot speak with me. This is why you cannot stop me. This is why you can't say anything to me. You're not responding to me. Now let me show you what your father is made up of. Ali Akbar, I know you love me, you're proud of me, but today I want to show you something. That everyone will look at me. Every Nabi will look at me with pride. What Hussein did, he took that spear. And said, Father, you broke the door of Khaybar. But Father, look at me, what I'm doing. Khaybar is nothing. Pulling the spear from Ali Akbar's arm. Hussein pulled it out. Wa Akbara. Wa Muhammada. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. معتب حسين.